Page 10, Salaika Sutta. The Buddha's reply. The Buddha's reply to the question of Chunda is as follows. Chunda, it is true that in this world there are many false views about Atta or Loka. These views stem from five groups of mind-body complex khandhas. They lie dormant in the five khandhas. They constantly focus on the five khandhas. But if a man knows this set of five khandhas is not mine, it is not my atta, if he thus sees things as they really are, with his insight knowledge, he will completely rid himself of the false views. It is hard to understand both the question and the answer. Chunda asked whether it was possible to overcome the wrong views, just as one begins to reflect on them. But what is the beginning of reflection? The Buddha's answer is that contemplation of the insubstantiality of the five khandhas means the elimination of the wrong views. But how is one to contemplate it? In order to be free from wrong views about Atta or Loka, we should know their mainspring as well as the misconceptions about it that give rise to these views. So according to the Buddha's teaching, these wrong beliefs will dominate us if we naively regard the five khandhas as our belonging, or as our atta, and we will overcome them when we contemplate the impersonality of the khandhas. The five khandhas are to be found in the body of every living being. They are 1, corporeality, rupa; 2, feeling, vedana; 3, perception, sanya; 4, he's got mental formations, mind state, sankhara; and 5, sense door consciousness, vijnana. The first group refers to the whole physical body that is made up of billions of infinitesimal particles of physical matter. The second group is the group of feelings, pleasant or unpleasant, that depend on our contact with the external world. Perception is the mental phenomenon that helps us to remember the sense objects. Sankharas are mental states that give rise to bodily, verbal, and mental behavior. This group includes sensorial contact, passa; reflection, manasikara; volition, chetana; then greed, lopa, ill will or anger, dosa; and other mental factors numbering 50. As for the last group, viz. Sense door consciousness, there are many kinds of it as determined by the corresponding sense organs, such as eye consciousness, ear consciousness, etc. Thus we have physical and mental groups, nama and rupa. The physical being the corporeality, and the mental comprising the four groups of psychic activities. The five khandhas in action. The five khandhas become active when there is contact between the senses and their respective objects. When any object is seen, the eye, together with the whole body, plus the visual object, constitute the corporeality, rupa. The pleasant or unpleasant feeling at the sight is vedana. Cognition of the object is sanya. Paying attention to the object or making any effort to see it represents the sankhara, and the awareness of the object seen is sense, is vijnana. Whenever we see, only these five khandhas occur, and there is no atta beside them. Yet people usually identify each of the five khandhas involved in the event of seeing with their atta or ego entity. When a man sees himself, he regards the visual object as his ego entity, and when he sees some living being, he considers it the ego entity of somebody else. Thus, the ego belief is rooted in the human tendency to identify the five khandhas with ego entity at the moment of seeing. Likewise, the five khandhas come into play when we hear or smell or taste or touch or think. Again, we have the ego illusion that stems from the human tendency to regard the khandhas as the ego entity. Most of the ordinary people are under the influence of the ego belief that has its origin in consciousness, since they usually make their ego identical with their mental activities and stages such as emotions, example, happiness or unhappiness, feelings, memory, perception, intention, effort, and so forth. Potential defilements. In his reply to Chunda, the Buddha said that the erroneous views about ego arise, lie dormant, and occur constantly. They arise because of misconceptions about the khandhas at the moment of seeing, etc. They arise not once or twice, but repeatedly. They lie dormant in the sense that although they may not arise at the moment of seeing, etc., because of wise reflection, yoniso manasikara, etc., they are ready to do so under certain circumstances. The five khandhas, which become manifest when we see, etc., leave a clear impression on us. And reflections on such impressions may give rise to greed, ill will, ignorance, conceit, and so forth. There may also prevail a false view which identifies our experience with the ego. It was I who saw, etc. Thus, the potential for the ego belief lies in the clear memory of sense objects. Averting defilement potential through contemplation. In order to counter the latent defilements, we should contemplate the arising and passing away of khandhas, their impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and insubstantiality, anicca, dukkha, and anatta. We should try to see them as they really are. We should note seeing at the moment of seeing, and in the same way we must be mindful of other sensations that result from hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. The objects of introspection in regard to the sense of touch are manifold, for this sensation is involved at the moment of walking, sitting, lying, bending, etc. The feelings of warmth, painfulness, itchiness, or tiredness, too, stem from the sense of touch. There are also numerous objects or contemplation at the moment of consciousness of mental events, like intending or knowing or thinking, etc. Pleasure, joy, sorrow, anger, craving, and other emotions may also be the objects of introspection. But the beginner in meditation cannot introspect every physical or mental event, nor can he develop the power of concentration by so doing. So he should begin with a few physical activities, such as sitting or touching. Or he can practice in and out breathing and watch the nostril tip, noting the inhalation and exhalation. But the best method that we recommend is that of watching the abdominal motion, i.e. the rising and falling of the abdomen. But the yogi's mindfulness is not confined to abdominal motion. While watching the abdominal rising and falling, You should also note pains, aches, bending and stretching, etc. In short, you should watch all mental and physical events. Begin with the abdominal motion. But as you get used to mindfulness, you should extend it to all other psychophysical phenomena. As you gain practice in mindfulness, you will become aware of only the phenomena, such as seeing and hearing, without any sign of permanence, pleasant or unpleasant character, or ego entity. Initially, you will see the corporeality as the known object and the mind as the knowing subject. But with the development of concentration, you will find only cause and effect. Further strengthening of the power of concentration will then lead you to realize the perpetual arising and passing away of phenomena at every moment. This is not I. Then you will come to know the impermanence of the five khandhas, and this knowledge is an antidote to conceit, just as awareness of imminent death is bound to counter inordinate pride. So whenever the yogi realizes that everything is transitory, he knows, this is not I. Moreover, he is fully aware of the unsatisfactoriness of everything that arises and invariably passes away. He does not regard any sense object as his belonging, an object of attachment or as something on which he can depend. So whenever he is aware of the impermanence and unsatisfactoriness of things, he reflects, this is not mine. Again, since everything which the yogi watches conflicts with his desire and passes away in accordance with their nature, he comes to realize the futility and impersonality of the khandhas. This realization of anatta, non-existence of ego, is of paramount importance. Whenever the yogi contemplates the three marks of the khandhas and knows, this is not mine, this I am not, he will have no ego illusion about them. He will not regard himself as the subject who sees or hears. And so, through meditation, he will, for the time being, free himself from the belief in ego entity. But this temporary elimination of the ego illusion does not mean its complete eradication. The illusion will arise whenever the yogi fails to contemplate the khandhas. Insight knowledge of the three marks of khandhas, together with their arising and passing away, will in due course lead to bhanga-jnana, which makes the yogi see only the dissolution of all phenomena. Then he will find the sense object, as well as the sense door consciousness that he notes, continually vanishing. He understands clearly that everything is impermanent and unsatisfactory, insubstantial and unworthy of attachment. Later on, there arises bhaya-jnana. It's the knowledge of the terrifying character of the khandhas. This gives rise to knowledge of their defects, adina-va-jnana, which in turn leads to weariness or disgust, nibbida-jnana. Then the yogi wants to renounce the five khandhas, mucitu kamya tayajnana, and he exerts more effort to contemplate, patisankha jnana. This results in detachment from the khandhas, sankha-rupeka jnana. With the maturity of this knowledge, there emerges the sotapatti magga jnana. When the yogi sees the peace of nirvana, wherein all the physical and mental phenomena become totally extinct. At this stage, insight into the three signs of existence suffice to eliminate the ego belief. According to Salaika Sutta, the knowledge, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not my atta, is sufficient to overcome the ego illusion. Once one has seen the Nibbana, it is not possible for anyone to have illusion about the khandhas. The illusion is completely eliminated, and hence the Buddha's reply to Chunda that we have already quoted. How to contemplate for the elimination of the belief? It is easy to know through book learning, hearing a sermon or memorization that the khandhas do not belong to the ego, that as such they are unworthy of attachment. But neither this hearsay knowledge nor the intellectual acceptance of the fact in itself helps us to remove defilements. It is only the intuitive, empirical knowledge that will ensure their riddance. So through constant introspection, the yogi notes that everything that arises passes away immediately, and he gains an insight into the impermanence of all phenomena, their frightful aspect and unsatisfactoriness. He knows well that there is nothing internally or externally that belongs to the ego, and so he becomes free from attachment. Moreover, this insight helps him to overcome egocentric pride. Pride is due to ignorance of the transitory nature of existence. Ordinary people do not observe the arising and passing away of psychophysical phenomena, and they believe that the physical body and consciousness last a lifetime. That the man who now sees and hears is the same individual who saw and heard before. This illusion of permanence and identity is the mainspring of pride and uppishness. But for the yogi who is aware of the ceaseless dissolution of mind-body complex, there is no cause for conceit. Since every physical or mental phenomenon arises and vanishes instantly, there is no reason to believe in a living ego entity. The object known as well as the knowing consciousness, no, the object known as well as the knowing consciousness is always subject to dissolution, and the only reality is the ceaseless flux of psychophysical elements that are passing away. When the yogi develops his insight knowledge, everything that arises disappears as soon as he notes it. If the mind wanders while observing the rising and falling of the abdomen, the yogi instantly notes it, and it, the wandering mind, disappears. If he has a sensation of heat in a certain part of the body, he directs his attention to it, and it is gone the next moment, together with the consciousness that focuses on it. Certainly, the perpetual dissolution of the psychophysical phenomena cannot represent a living ego entity, a man or a woman with a permanent self. Recognition of this fact is the real insight knowledge of the impersonality of existence. Some yogis say that they see the ceaseless arising and passing away of the objects of introspection, but that they are not well aware of what is happening to the introspecting mind. In that case, they are not yet free from ego belief in regard to the subjective role of consciousness. But those who constantly observe every physical and mental phenomenon that stems from the six senses in accordance with the teaching of Satipatthana Sutta find all sense objects, as well as the observing consciousness, constantly passing away. And so they become fully aware of the impermanence of everything. Then, after passing through the successive stages of insight knowledge, the yogi attains the first path of holiness and sees nirvana, the cessation of all psychophysical phenomena. Only then will he be free from all misconceptions about atta or loka. This is what the Buddha taught when he replied to Chunda. In short, it is the insight knowledge of the continuous flux of all psychophysical phenomena, together with the three marks of existence, that brings home to the yogi the futility of attachment, conceit, and ego belief, and makes him see Nibbana on the first path of holiness. It is only then that he is wholly free from false beliefs. The development of concentration, or the mere knowledge of the arising and passing away of everything, or the emergence of insight knowledge in itself does not mean the elimination of the beliefs. On the contrary, the yogi who is wedded to such beliefs tends to overestimate himself as a result of his attainment of jhana. This is pointed out in the further dialogues of the Buddha. First, jhana and conceit. Chinda, I will tell you about the cause of misconception and conceit in connection with the practice of meditation. Among my disciples, there are some monks who have attained the first jhana that is characterized by joy, piety, and freedom from sensuous desire, hindrances, and discursive thinking. Jhana is the concentration of attention on one single object, such as earth, water, in and out breathing, an organ of the body, or a corpse. This state of consciousness, involving concentration and tranquility, is the samatha jhana. The other jhana is the vipassana jhana, which has, as its object, the contemplation and insight knowledge of the three marks of existence, namely anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Attributes of the first jhana. In the first jhana, the yogi is free from sensuous desires that always dominate ordinary people and even embarrass the meditators who have not yet developed concentration. The first jhana also ensures freedom from the other four hindrances: ill will, torpor and laziness, restlessness and worry and doubt. This freedom is enjoyed not only while the yogi is absorbed in jhana, but also just before and just after his attainment of this state of consciousness. Freedom from hindrances is followed by joy, piety, and happiness, sukha. The yogi has an indescribable feeling of ecstasy pervading the whole body. They are completely free from stiffness, tiredness, and other physical discomforts. Thus, beside freedom from hindrances, the yogi has five attributes indicating their absorption in the first jhana: ecstatic rapture, intense joy, very active thought conception, vitaka, discursive thinking, vichara, and one-pointedness of mind, ekagata, or samadhi. The body of the yogi who is absorbed in the first jhana is motionless, tough, and composed. This state of jhanic consciousness may last 2 or 3 hours, or it may last the whole day or the whole night. There is no collapsing or swaying of the body. It is a mistake to regard, as some people do, lying or rolling on the floor as a sign of spiritual attainment. These attainments, designated by such terms as jhana, magga, or pala, or apanna javana, which we may translate as attainment impulsion, for the commentaries define it as maintenance and strengthening of bodily postures, such as sitting and standing. Because of the freedom from hindrances and the five varieties of experience that characterize the first jhana, the yogi tends to be elated and conceited. But in his reply to Chunda, the Buddha says unequivocally that the attainment of the first jhana does not mean the lessening of defilements. There are grounds for delusion on the part of the yogi who is absorbed in the first jhana. He hopes to have some unusual experience, and so if he does have such experience, he tends to be deluded into a false sense of attainment. Some have delusions because they are misguided by incompetent teachers. In the case of some yogis, relative freedom from hindrances and joy and other experience are satisfying enough to give cause for self-complacency. In fact, however, this jhanic experience is a far cry from the higher insight of anicca, dukkha, anatta, it is by no means to be confused with the practice of salaka that helps to lessen defilements. For the first jhana can only keep off the defilements, whereas through the salaka practice, the yogi can eventually remove them, root and branch. Yet the attainment of this jhana tends to give the yogi the impression of being a sotapanna or an arahat. There were bhikkhus subject to such illusions in the time of the Buddha and after his parinibbana. 500 deluded monks. Once 500 monks meditated in the forest according to the instructions of the Buddha. When they became absorbed in jhana, they found themselves without any defilement, and so being convinced of their spiritual attainment, they came to report to the Buddha. At the monastery gate, they met Ananda, who informed them of the Buddha's instruction that they should see the teacher only after visiting the cemetery. So the monks went to the cemetery. It appeared that in those days corpses were left unburied at the cemetery. The corpses to be burned were apparently in a fresh condition at the time of the monks' visit. At the sight of the decomposed corpses, the monks were filled with disgust. Yet they could not help lusting for the bodies of women who had died recently. Only then did they realize that they were not yet wholly free from defilements. Then the Buddha emitted divine rays from his abode and preached a sermon. On hearing the sermon, all the monks became arahats. The story of Tera Mahanaga. About 300 or 400 years after the parinibbana of the Buddha, there lived in southern Sri Lanka an arahat called Dhammadina. At that time, there was an elderly monk named Mahanaga, who regarded himself as an arahat. One day, Dhammadina went to the elderly monk and asked many questions, to which the latter answered easily. Dhammadina complimented the monk on his deep wisdom and inquired of him when he first became an arahat. He said he had been an arahat for more than 60 years. Did he possess psychic powers? Yes, he did. At the request of his interlocutor, the monk created a big elephant. Would he now will that the elephant trumpet and rush towards him? He willed accordingly. But as the animal came rushing, he became frightened and was about to run away, when Dhammadina seized the fringe of his robe and said, "Sir, would an arahat have any fear?" Only then did Mahanaga know that he was a mere worldling. He meditated in accordance with the instructions of Dhammadina and became a real arahat. Story of Tera Chulasuma. The story of another ill-informed yogi monk is told in the commentary on Salaka Sutta. He was called Chulasuma, and he dwelt at a forest retreat that turned out many arahats in those days. Chulasuma, too, considered himself an arahat. At the request of Dhammadina, he created a lake and a big lotus flower with a girl dancing and singing sweetly on it. Dhammadina told the monk to watch the dancing girl for a moment and went into a room. Then while the monk was watching the girl of his own making, the sensual desire that had been lying dormant for 16 years began to rear its ugly head. Being disillusioned, the monk meditated according to Dhammadina's instructions and attained real arahatship. Unusual experiences. These stories point to the misconceptions current in ancient India, when the Buddhist religion was flourishing. The yogi monks of those days were spiritually advanced and endowed with psychic powers. Their misconception was due to unusual power of concentration. Nowadays, some yogis have illusions without making any spiritual progress. When the yogi who correctly practices gains an insight into the arising and passing away of all mental phenomena, he is overwhelmed with a variety of unusual experiences, such as seeing the light, rapture, tranquility, joy, faith, and so forth. In the Visuddhimagga, the yogi is assured of these experiences. If the practice of meditation does not bring about these experiences, the question arises as to whether the method is correct or whether the yogi is lacking in effort. On the other hand, the yogi who has such experiences may overestimate his attainments. Present bliss. The first jhana is not the practice of Seleka Dhamma that helps to root out the defilements. In the Seleka Sutta, the Buddha terms it Ditta Dhamma Sukha Vihara, that is, living in bliss here and now. While the yogi is absorbed in jhana, his consciousness is fixed on a single object. With his mind free from all unwholesome distractions, he is calm and peaceful. This state may last continuously for 2 or 3 hours. The Buddha pointed out too how illusion and self-complacency may arise from the second jhana, with its 3 characteristics: rapture, joy, and one-pointedness of mind. Or from the third jhana, with its joy and one-pointedness of mind. Or from the fourth jhana, with its equanimity and one-pointedness of mind. Of course, the second, third, and the fourth jhanas are more sublime than the preceding states of consciousness. But they ensure only bliss in the present life, and are by no means to be equated with Seleka practice that is designed to eliminate defilements. Nor is Seleka practice synonymous with the jhana of Arka Sanchayatana, the sphere of unbounded space. Jhana, jhana of Vijnananjayatana, the sphere of unbounded consciousness. The jhana of Akinjanyayatana, sphere of nothingness, and jhana of Neva Sanya Na Sanya Yatana, sphere of neither perception nor non-perception. These jhanas do not help to overcome defilements. They cause only peaceful bliss, and as such are termed Santa Vihara.